Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to another episode of Living Well with Kathleen Saunders, your weekly podcast where we discuss the financial, physical, spiritual, and social well-being of everyday people like you and me. The information shared in this show is for general information purposes only and should not be used to make any personal changes to your lifestyle or health without consulting the appropriate financial, medical, or healthcare professionals. My guest today is Thalia Stage. Thalia is a certified nutritional practitioner with a Bachelor's of Science in Food, Nutrition, and Health. She is the founder of Thalia Stage Wellness and a partner at Healing House Natural Wellness. She is also an instructor at the Institute of Holistic Nutrition. Her coaching practice helps clients achieve their wellness goals by embracing functional foods and healthy lifestyle changes. Thalia's own health challenges and weight issues prompted her to pursue an education in nutritional science and holistic nutrition. Thalia empowers her clients to regain balance with ease and concrete steps. Hello, Thalia. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me on your podcast, Kathleen.
You're welcome. You know, Thalia, I am really, really looking forward to our conversation today. It's a highly,
me too.
Yeah, it's been a highly requested podcast. Menopause is something that as women, we cannot avoid, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's the beauty of life.
Yes. But before we get started, how about you just share with us, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're currently doing.
Great. So my main focus, my life's passion, is to bring people the tools and knowledge and the best up-to-date research and the knowledge with the ancient wisdom of holistic nutrition, food in Ayurvedic culture, in Chinese culture, in so many different ways so that they have the tools to support optimal wellness.
Awesome. That's great. Excellent. So you have the tools that we need to help us manage our menopause, correct?
I like the way you put it. I want to provide as many natural options as possible to make this beautiful transition in life as comfortable as possible.
Beautiful. But let's get right into it. So, you know, Thalia, approximately what age does menopause begin?
So that's actually a very, very good question. Mm-hmm. Because typically, let me ask you then, when do you think people experience menopause?
In the early 50s, maybe say between 45, 50.
Yeah, that's actually a very good answer because there is usually, you know, there is, when we talk about statistics, mm-hmm. there is the medium, which is what the layperson known as average, and also there is the range, right? When is the earliest time someone experienced menopause, and some people experience menopause a little bit later in life. So we're only talking about, you know, for a large percentage of the individual, this range looks like from the age of 40 to about the age of 58. Mm-hmm. Although if you have to take the kind of medium, the average, that's about 51 years old.
Okay, so I wasn't far off at all.
Perfect. And I love that you give me a range as opposed to someone says it has to be this age, otherwise it's not normal. And I think everyone is very different.
That's right, exactly. That's so true. How long does premenopause last? And that's before we actually get into the menopause, correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. So if you kind of look at the menopause as a more umbrella term, let's say, it actually is three phases.
Okay.
Do you know that?
No, I'm going to guess you're going to tell me the three phases.
Yes. So just like pregnancy has three trimesters, mm-hmm. for menopause, they're perimenopause, which is the period between around 2 to 8 years. You know, people always like to say, oh, it's 4 years before the cessation of menstruation, but it's actually a range. It's mm-hmm. between 2 to 8 years before the stopping of menstruation. Okay, and then there is the menopause phase where, it's basically the tapering off of menstruation, and we'll probably get into the juicy details about how that could look different from person to person. And after the woman stops bleeding for 12 months, and this type of marker marks menopause. So that's perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause can last up to 15 years. It's when the hormones are readjusting, the body is readjusting to a new type of rhythm.
I'm going to stop you right there because I don't like what you just said to me. Up to 15 years, Thalia, that we can continue with this post-menopause? Seriously?
Not for the majority of people. For the
Okay.
majority of people, they probably will continue to experience symptoms for about 4 or 5 years after they had
Okay, that I
their
can
last
handle.
period. And a lot of people will continue to experience these adjustments, although they might not be fully aware because the symptoms went away, but then that's your body's rhythm, starting by the rhythm regulated by the moon, going into the rhythm that's regulated by the sun, which is a beautiful thing. And something else I love to encourage all the listeners to who menstruate right now or who's or experiencing menopause, I want to change the mindset around menopause, if you allow me to share,
Yeah, sure, please.
because I find it's really interesting that in Western cultures, that means North America, Europe, people have a more have a very, very different view on menopause. And the medical interventions can come in as an form of hormone replacement therapy, and then cholesterol has been monitored, bone density is monitored. There is a medicalization of a what seems to be a very natural process, right? Although people across the globe experience menopause, but there is a more medical medicalization of menopause in Western cultures. The
Okay.
way to look at it is from, if I could share a little bit about how, in our North America Native cultures, many, because there are various First Nation cultures in North America, and a lot of them, I heard, that treats menopause as the woman's rite of passage into a new chapter of her life where she holds onto her own power. It's a very empowering process that needs to be celebrated.
Oh wow. Yeah, I like that. Another phase that we're entering in to celebrate, right?
Wisdom, you're holding on to wisdom, you're
True.
holding on to your own power, and it just is a very amazing passage of life.
I just want to go back to the three phases and make sure that I got this right. So the perimenopause that starts anywhere from 2 to 8 years before the menstrual cycle stops, correct?
That's right.
Right. Menopause now, you have to go a full 12 months without having a period.
That's right.
So what happens now if you go 10 months, you have a period, and then you don't have a period for another 2 or 5 months or so? Does it have to be always a complete 12 months?
That's right. So
Okay.
if the period stops and starts again, then it means this woman is still categorized as in the perimenopause phase.
Okay, all right. And postmenopause, as you said, which I didn't really like that, it can take up to 15 years. However, the average woman, it's anywhere between 4 to 5 years.
That's right.
Awesome. Good. I'm paying attention. Can a woman just go into menopause like that? I know what you've just finished saying, but are there any exceptions where a woman will just go straight into menopause without any signs or symptoms? But maybe before we even go there, you should tell us what are some of the signs and symptoms before you dive into that.
Okay. So I have a very good example. Okay. Let's call it a case study. She's not my client, but she's the mom of a friend of mine. And she is a very hardworking woman, raised many kids, 5 or 6 of them during her life. And she eats completely back in the time. There is no way that you can even get processed foods. Mm. So she lives this very hardworking, labor-intensive life, this woman. So what happens to her is her period just, according to what my friend describes, that just tapered off. Mm. No hot flashes, no complaints.
I would like that.
So I think there, and also another perception I like to challenge is the perception of treating menopause like a condition, right? It really is a rite of passage. And it's a life transition, just like, you know, teenage girls. So they start to get their first period. We don't really, really medicalize that. You know, it's like we celebrate you, you're entering into womanhood. But for menopause, somehow, like naturally, right, from the stories that we share with one another, that menopause has been this really, you know, when I talk with friends, it's been this really feared, almost like a condition, if I'm not exaggerating it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it can be just a very smooth transition, like my friend's mother experienced, stopping the period, just slowly tapered off. The time between periods became longer and longer until one day it never came again. Okay. So, and that was it. And
okay.
No symptoms.
Oh wow. I kind of like that part, no symptoms, because I'm hearing of friends who are going through the hot flashes. Oh. I actually read a quote. It says, "I'm still hot. It just comes in flashes now." And I thought that was
that is a good one. Right? I'm still very hot.
So, you know, as much as that's an awesome quote there, but I would rather be one of those that just skipped all of those hot flashes, the night sweats, and all those other symptoms that follow premenopause period. Can you go ahead and share with us some of the symptoms that a woman can experience?
Yeah, let me share some symptoms with you, because I feel like, you know, this is not something that everyone experienced the same way. Mm-hmm. However, I would like to, you know, share them not because I want to create fear around menopause. I want you to understand them. Maybe or maybe not, someone will experience these symptoms, but then they will know what to do with them.
Exactly. Okay? Right. Yeah.
Okay. So, everyone experienced menopause in very different ways. So one of the symptoms probably mentioned is hot flashes. Right, so hot flashes is not a really well understood phenomenon, actually. To be honest, we don't really know. It's a vasomotor reaction in the body, so it involves the blood vessels, and it involves the muscles around it as well. So it is a phenomenon not really well understood. So that's number one. And number two, there is anxiety. Mm-hmm. I find that a lot of women, actually, instead of complaining about other, you know, stereotypical menopause symptoms like hot flashes, night sweats, and period PMS symptoms, they actually, one of the first things is anxiety, as part of that presentation, anxiety, a lot of women experience heart palpitation, okay, and then worried about what's happening with their heart and feeling nervous, feeling like it's hard to sleep, and those types of symptoms. So we have two so far. Mm-hmm. One of them is hot flashes, which is the classic one that you mentioned. And then we say the mental emotional aspect, which is
anxiety,
and also involving the physical element, the anxiety, mm-hmm. nervousness, and in some people that can be kind of flipped around and present as depression as well, because the hormonal changes are actually shifting the serotonin and the dopamine levels in the brain, resulting in neurotransmitter shift that might change the person's temperament.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was a question that somebody, you know, had asked. Why do women become so moody? And so that's the answer to that question right there, mm-hmm. the hormonal shifting. Okay.
Yes. So with the hormones, as you know, serotonin is highly, highly tied in with our melatonin, with mm-hmm. the help of B6, with zinc, magnesium, and a lot of cofactors, serotonin, in the presence of darkness, gets turned into melatonin. So that also ties in why some people have trouble, you know, they sleep like a log,
right.
for the entirety of their, for as long as they can remember, but sometimes they, when they enter perimenopause, menopause, they might experience insomnia to certain degrees. And when I say certain degrees, it might not be a full-on insomnia, just watching the clock all night long, but it's the type of insomnia, maybe they sleep a little bit lighter and they don't wake up feeling as energized and clear-headed. So it kind of perpetuates this vicious cycle of not getting enough sleep that will exacerbate hot flashes, exacerbate the anxiety, depression, so etc.
All right. Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That can affect us quite a bit. And sleep is important mm-hmm. to, you know, you need a good night's rest in order to mm-hmm. be able to function properly throughout the course of the day, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And not having enough sleep or getting too light of a sleep might even throw off one's blood sugar regulation,
mm-hmm.
exacerbating the moods, mood swings, anxiety, depression. And some other classic symptoms that's hormone related, including just in general, okay, vaginal dryness, PMS symptoms, and some, if you call them a symptom, I would call them a presentation of the hormone, which is what are the main two reproductive hormones females have during their reproductive years is the estrogen mm-hmm. and progesterone.
Estrogen, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, estrogen, progesterone. So when there is a shift in the hormone levels, just imagining, if for people listening,
mm-hmm.
imagine PMS is the imbalance of hormones, estrogen, progesterone. During perimenopause, menopause, if the hormone going into menopause is not well balanced, and that's menopause is going to be an additional stressor on your body's ability to regulate those hormones, resulting in more severe PMS symptoms, and for some people is nonstop bleeding
mm-hmm.
That can really bring down your iron level
mm-hmm.
without the presence of the fibroid, that is, mm-hmm. ruling that out, can really cause like fatigue and depression and memory loss and all of those kind of issues. So period related. And another element is cardiovascular health.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually related to estrogen. Some cardiovascular health markers
mm-hmm.
actually change for many women, for a big percentage of women post-menopause, is that their LDL, which is what's labeled as not desirable,
mm-hmm.
Low density lipoprotein, they increase after menopause, and the cholesterol in the blood increases after menopause. So basically, with regards to cardiovascular health, although this is not the scientific explanation, but there is a connection between lower, so gradually declining estrogen level that is associated with increased in LDL level and increase in cholesterol level, which is considered as increased risk for heart disease, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason for that, although this is the reason I have, but not necessarily the scientific reason, is because when you think about a supply and demand kind of equation, and when the body is really, really used to making a certain amount of cholesterol, which is the base for estrogen, okay? So now after menopause, after this transition, there's not as much demand to divert that cholesterol, which is the base of estrogen, into reproductive hormones. Now that you have all of this raw material, but the body's said, okay, I no longer have orders for estrogen and progesterone.
Okay, all right.
So now you have this surplus of cholesterol to deal with.
Okay, so that's now how you increased your cardiovascular risk for it. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Another presentation of menopause or health considerations is bone health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because estrogen also has a protective effect on the uptake of calcium on bone density, so very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And one way to really support this kind of hormonal adjustments, you think about it, is on one hand, you need to think about good quality fats, such as evening primrose oil or black currant seed oil, contains a type of anti-inflammatory fatty acid called GLA, gamma-linolenic acid.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, it's very supportive in helping people managing hot flash symptoms.
Okay.
Because it kind of has a kind of providing a balancing effect on hormone levels.
So the GLA acid is something that can help to manage hot flashes, you say. So that's a supplement.
Exactly.
That we, yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah, from evening primrose oil, from barrage oil, and don't use barrage oil if you're pregnant.
What about black cohosh? I heard that.
Black cohosh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to talk about black cohosh. That's amazing herb. That's actually one of the longest being researched, the longest since the 50s. Okay. So we have fair amount of good data around it. Okay. It's a herb that's got a lot of terpenes and isoflavonoids. And I'll kind of dissect the science for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, the terpenes are actually little rings. They're, imagine those carbon rings.
Okay.
With mm-hmm. kind of hexagon-shaped rings, has the ring-like structure that can mimic the functions of hormones, and that can influence our hormones in the body, because it can mimic hormones in a body. And isoflavonoids, which are plant-based hormone precursors. Think about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has vitamin C in it. It also has calcium, which is, as you know, very nourishing for the bone health.
Yeah.
Chromium, good for balancing blood sugar levels. Selenium, different types of B vitamins, and salicylic acid, which is an anti-inflammatory. And black cohosh, it actually is non-estrogenic, although it has these potential to interact with our hormones, but it's actually not really blocking your estrogen uptake, nor it's creating new estrogen in the body. What it really does is, with these ring-like structures, it actually affects neurotransmitter levels, such as serotonin and dopamine levels, and also act on opioid receptors, creating the sensation of, you know, pain. So reduce the sensation of pain, and it also creates cooling effect in that way.
Okay. So definitely that will make sense, using that on the hot flashes when you're experiencing all that heat.
Because it's not really playing with your hormones or kind of tricking your hormones in any way. So black cohosh can be, you know, a very good question, because it can be a like use on its own, and can be a herb that can be effective on its own. Depending on what form you use, make sure you get a good source and be consistent with anything related to hormone. Things can slowly shift. So allow it 3 months to create any of the good effects.
So you take that for about 3 months, you're saying, the black cohosh. And what method would you say to use that? In a tincture, a capsule, decoction? How would you say to use that?
Yeah, I would say for black cohosh, my best, for my preference, I would like a organic alcohol-based extract, because in herbal medicine, we always say, okay, like, we understand there are isoflavonoids and the terpenes in black cohosh. We think those are the active compounds, but, you know, as we understand, like in an orange, it's not just vitamin C, it has chromium, folate, and all of those synergistic nutrients to make that, make the whole plant or the whole food work better in a body. So that's why I prefer a broad spectrum extract, which is in an alcohol base.
Okay, great. So Thalia, you were telling us some symptoms, and then we dived in and we got into some herbs and some other things. Were you finished with your list of symptoms? I think we got
yes.
To... Okay, very good. All right, perfect.
So shall we do a kind of recap?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So the recap is, so first we've got, is, you know, sounds like this is the most asked question, is the hot flashes, right? And from there, we branched into symptoms that's related to anxiety and depression. And then we talked about estrogen-related issues. So three big areas, estrogen-related concerns and symptoms includes PMS symptoms, includes, for some people, is actually nonstop bleeding. And also for some others, that can be more hidden, long-term type of concerns, such as cardiovascular diseases, as well as osteoporosis.
How is one at a greater risk for this during menopause?
Let me actually share with you my thoughts on this, although I don't have data going into this, but I think a person would have increased risk factors if, for example, they've had low bone density throughout their life. Okay, so going into menopause, they already have a very low bone density starting point. And number two is people who's having a lot of caloric dense but not nutrient dense foods. So what we call a more acidic type of diet. They have an acidic environment in the body where people can actually, the body requires so much minerals to function optimally. So the body is going to actually borrow minerals from the bones, so to speak, is our biggest mineral bank in the body. We'll go there first. Okay. And number three, I would say, is for concerns for people who's not very well, like who's very sedentary, who doesn't use their, doesn't have weight-bearing exercises. And when I say weight-bearing exercises, it's very interesting, because when one hear the word weight-bearing exercises, am I playing like with dumbbells or am I kind of pumping irons? No, actually, walking is one of the best weight-bearing exercises for your legs. You're actually using your own body weight, so on the bones.
Okay, that's good to know. So, is exercise beneficial to menopause? And if so, what sort of exercise do you recommend?
So I believe that exercises should be something that the person thoroughly enjoy. It has to be a type of exercise you can actually sustain and enjoy.
Right.
Okay. And it like just going off from what I mentioned before, even walking, walking anywhere is a type of weight-bearing exercises. I always find that it's good to know your comfort zone, like what you can maintain, and just push yourself a little bit and kind of see what more your body is able to do. So, for example, one good example is yoga because it's quite relaxing, really healthy for the adrenal glands. It allow you to build connection and understanding of your body, and I think it's really re rewarding. Especially, it's good for gaining core strength. It uses a lot of your own body weight, and it just has mental and also both mental and physical benefits. I think yoga is really great. And for some people, that can even be tending to a garden, weeding a garden, or, I don't know, carrying your, harvesting cabbage and gourds. Housework as well.
All right. So basically anything that's got you moving.
Exactly. And I find that intentionally having 30 minutes of exercise is something people tend to be able to sustain, like in one form or another that we mentioned.
So it doesn't have to be a full cardio workout. It doesn't have to be a good 30-minute, 40-minute weight training session or anything like that. So simple walking, which most of us can do, a little gardening for those who have gardens, yoga for those who like to do that, and just general house cleaning for all of us that have to keep our house clean.
Exactly. Just feel, do whatever brings you joy and vitality. Exactly like what you said.
Yeah, because the worst thing is to do an exercise that you feel like you're doing a chore. Because your
Yeah.
chances are that you're not going to end up doing it, right? Are there any positive things that you can say about menopause?
Positive things. I think menopause is amazing. I actually personally I'm looking forward to it. Although I know these symptoms are like they can occur, that is a possibility, but I believe in no matter if you're currently in perimenopause or you're kind of fully experienced menopause and you're postmenopausal, I think it's very important to know that the body is built to try to give you balance. And when you give it the right tools and nutrient support, I think it's so amazing. So incredibly amazing to be able to, hold on spiritually, hold on to your own power, and just also having the not to worry that you will get pregnant, right?
That's a big one.
It's a liberation in a way.
Yeah, that's a big one. While you were saying that you were looking forward to menopause, I'm not there yet. And I was thinking, why would you be looking forward to menopause? But then a thought came to me. We should think positively, and maybe it will
Yeah.
be good to us when that time comes. And this, I'm just
Like a
saying, yeah, be.
ceremony, a s celebration of womanhood. I think that's just another stage of womanhood. Being menopausal doesn't mean someone is less feminine. I think it
Definitely
just
not.
makes the
No.
woman more feminine, if not.
Yes. So, you spoke about vaginal dryness. Is there anything that we can do to improve that?
Yes. Yes. So that is a something that I actually feel really passionate about is, so there are a few steps, okay? That's how I coach my client. There are a few steps kind of starting to support vaginal dryness. Okay. The number one kind of step is to appreciate the body. Okay. I find for many clients that I work with actually going through menopause, they have vaginal dryness. It's just unbearable. It's almost like, if you ever been to a very dry climate, your lips are cracking and dry from the really, really brutal dry air. It just cracks and bleeds. And that's how they describe their vaginal area is like. It's literally like having cracked lips downstairs, what I call. And, for many women, and I'm saying from my observation, many women are not very in touch with their vaginal area, with the perineum area. I think, and also there's a lot of shame around like touching one's body in that area. But I think the number one thing to do is mentally liberating yourself from all of those restrictions that's either put on you by the society, your upbringing, or whatever. It's an area that requires your loving energy. Okay, so that's step number one. And step number two is to nourish that. When you think about having chapped lips, well, I think one of the most kind of direct way is to actually apply something topically, right? Applying some cream there delicately. I'm not a hormone expert, but I certainly can shed some light on using non-hormonal ointments and liquids to help with the healing of the very delicate tissue. Okay. So one thing to do is using calendula oil, vitamin E, and St. John's wort oil.
Is that
So they're
altogether, or you're just saying, okay?
all together. So this is the base. So calendula oil is what you can do. You can get organic calendula petals. You can find it on Etsy, wherever you are in the States or Canada. You can find some good organic herbal sources that are ethically sourced from Etsy. In the UK, I like people have like Indigo Herbs. It's a really good website to buy herbs from. Ruthland, it's Ruthland. It's another great places to get herbs in the UK. Yeah, and if you're in Vancouver locally, you can support Gaia Garden or Philandia Natural Pharmacy. Those are two local places.
Okay,
Get
so
organic calendula petals, and you can use 1-to-1 ratio. If you want to really get in touch with your inner femininity, you can even make it yourself. Don't have to buy one. I'm sure there are ones you can buy, but you can just make it one part calendula and another part jojoba oil. I find that jojoba oil or rosehip oil, you can use them interchangeably. I find rosehip is a little bit lighter and has more antioxidants in there. Jojoba oil is just scent-free, it's quite hypoallergenic, and it kind of mimics the sebum of your skin. So just one part petals, one part oil. Same thing with St. John's wort. You can use one part herb, one part oil. Infuse that. Keep the jars in a airtight jar in a dark place for about 4 to 8 weeks, and then you drain the oil, and then you would use one part calendula, one part St. John's wort, and then you add some vitamin E to that. So St. John's wort is antifungal, antibacterial, so it helps if the tissue is broken already, and you want to prevent that from further inflammation and infection. So the St. John's wort is for that. But if you're just feeling the dryness, I would say the calendula oil would do with some vitamin E, which is a natural preservative and is also very healing as an antioxidant for the skin.
Awesome. So, so this is a formula that a person will have to do for themselves. Now, suppose somebody doesn't have time or knows where to go and get all those ingredients. What topical cream do you recommend?
I actually find that if you can just buy these individual ingredients, organic calendula cream, organic calendula oil, or organic St. John's wort oil, you can buy that and make it yourself. And a lot of herbal dispensaries, local herbal dispensaries, if you ask, they might already have a vaginal support formula ready.
Okay. That's
similar along this line.
Awesome. Very good.
Okay.
Very good.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. And the step number three.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a bonus step if we're ready.
Nice.
I still have time for the bonus step. So step number three is actually internally kind of get to the bottom of why the person is experiencing vaginal dryness. One thing that really common in people experiencing vaginal dryness is the lack of estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in this case, we actually want to support your estrogen levels internally with things like red clover.
Okay.
Red clover helps with estrogen balance in the body with herbs like hops. So red clover is very nutrient dense with lots of minerals. And for hops, it's something that really helps with sleep as well. So it helps with sleeping, and it also provides plant-based estrogen. And from a nutrition perspective, lots of estrogen contributing foods that contributes very weak levels of estrogen, that's not going to overwhelm the body with a ton of estrogen, but providing a little bit of a cushioning, buffering effect using legumes. Especially legumes are amazing. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Legumes are extremely rich in phytoestrogens. Things like lentils, which is a really great source of fiber and iron and B vitamins. Things like chickpeas, really good source of phytoestrogens.
Mm-hmm.
Sesame seeds, also rich in calcium, also good source of phytoestrogen. Sunflower seeds, and also flax seeds is actually one of the best sources of phytoestrogen. So yeah, add those to your smoothie,
salads. Make a stew from the lentils and the flaxseed. You know, you put that in your smoothie, chickpeas in your salad, like you said. That's so many ways to use that. That's really awesome. And you know what? I just had some red clover today.
Oh, okay. How do you feel? I love red clover.
Yeah, I just started taking it yesterday. I like it. I don't make it too strong, but yeah, I like it. See how that works.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And also like other supportive herbs like black cohosh that we talked about that has benefits on the neurotransmitter balance, right? And things like Damiana, if you are more like towards the stress kind of category. So we're talking about adaptogens now. So if the dryness is also compounded by stress, then using things like Damiana, which is a beautiful, rosy, lemony, just delicious, delicious herbal tea. And I like to just infuse it with all of the like things like red clover. It's just delicious. It's aphrodisiac as well, just as a bonus fact. And oat seeds, milky oat seeds, it's a very good nervine herb that helps to calm the nervous system.
Awesome. There's some great herbs there.
Yeah, great herbs. And shatavari, it has possible adaptogenic property. It is related to asparagus, and it's from Ayurvedic practices. It's a water-generating, very nourishing herb that helps with the generation of water.
And that was Shadowberry?
Shatavari,
Barry.
Shatavari.
Mm-hmm.
Shatavari.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And
Okay.
are you ready for
Yes,
the
let's hear the bonus.
bonus step? So one other way to get the hormones flowing, I'll let you use your imaginations, let the audience use their imaginations as well. When natural ways to get the hormones flowing, create natural dopamine and create natural neurotransmitters. It's something that you can do with a partner, and I'll let you use your
All
imaginations, and that's
right
the
then. Yes.
bonus. And don't stop doing that.
I hear you. Awesome. Well, we gotta get sort that vaginal dryness first, and then we can get right at that.
Even just allow the hormones to flow by, having a loving bond with a partner. That's
Yeah.
very key.
Definitely, definitely. I hear you. You know, I wanted to ask you, are there any, we talked about vaginal dryness. That's one kind of a condition that women experience. Are there any skin conditions that happen due to being in menopause, premenopause?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Many people at this time, a large percentage of women also experience skin dryness. So just as lack of estrogen can cause the vaginal tissue to thin out and become more delicate. So that's why, we need those oils and ointments. To be honest, very, very honest with you, it is not a, to me at least, it's not a natural thing to apply oil to that area.
Right.
But as you use these oil to massage the area inside and the labia area, the perineum area, just get that area nice and supple and with loving energy. It's not like, I'm not rushing it. It's like, I need to, I'll just like, wash hands. Okay, done. So instead of rushing the process, treating it more like a, I don't know, putting on polysporin, kind of treat it as a more self-care. And yeah, so get that area nice and supple. And, that's one way of protecting that delicate tissue. So our actual skin requires more TLC during perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause.
I see. Wonderful. I was going to ask, you know, a lot of women experience weight gain while going through menopause. Is that something that's normal? Why does that happen?
So one thing to notice, this is very, very common for a lot of people. And for in terms of weight gain, I would say more so weight gain in a unwanted areas, let's say. It's not really the weight that's really the matter, but it's the changes in the proportion of the body, right? Going from because estrogen directs the fat deposit onto more of the thigh area and the hip area, and the lack of estrogen actually make the fat more easily migrate into the stomach area. Estrogen levels actually dictates where fat tends to deposit in the body. So one thing to really kind of let's say making the body shape as healthy as possible is, having a larger waist to hip ratio increases one's risk for cardiovascular disease. So even not from a vanity standpoint, from a cardiovascular health standpoint, it is something to pay attention to. So first is really getting the hormones sorted out. So, using what we discussed before to really help balance hormone levels, right? Making sure that giving the body the best chance to feel balanced as the body is adjusting itself. That's number one. Number two is allowing the body to move, right? Introduce as much movement as possible, as much movement that you enjoy as possible is very key. And number three is really, really making sure that there is no other confounding variables that's contributing to the weight gain. Optimizing thyroid hormones and blood sugar levels are very key. Those are some of the underlying factors I tend to focus educating my clients on is this is, the waist to hip ratio. It's only like the weight gain or waist to hip ratio. It's only it's also very, very important indicator of all of these health concerns that we talked about, like thyroid, heart disease, and diabetes. So make sure that we work towards optimizing those biomarkers, thyroid, blood, lipid panel, and also blood sugar levels.
So we need to get those checked. To get the all right. You know, I just wanted to talk about what you just said again about, regarding the waist to hip ratio. This is why then we did talk about it. Exercise, you know, we need to stress that exercise is definitely really important to help keep the body moving, as you said, to, you know, help make sure that we don't gain the weight. Well, is it just inevitable that we're going to gain the weight in the hip area? Is that just something that we can't help unless we exercise?
I would say actually the hip fat deposit is not as dangerous as abdominal fat deposits, so fat around the waistline. So to kind of going back to your question, reducing the risk by exercising, because it's not inevitable, it's just the body's kind of trending that direction. So from hip to thigh, so that imagine that's kind of lower down. If you think about a pear, that's lower down. And from a pear to an apple, basically. So that's the tendency if we don't pay attention to exercising, optimizing those biomarkers, and also making sure the body is getting the nutrients that the body needs, in conjunction with good exercise or movements that people enjoy.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So while we're talking about
My pleasure.
exercise, while we're talking about exercise, diet and exercise usually go hand in hand. Is there any particular foods that are helpful to a woman going through menopause?
So in conjunction with weight-bearing exercises, and we defined that in the earlier discussion, that you need to consider having enough amino acids, so good quality protein to back that up. So where do we get good quality proteins? Generally speaking, for a healthy person without any dietary restrictions, I would encourage them to get a combination of plant and animal sources of protein. If you have way too much animal protein, building up a lot of those inflammatory fatty acids in the body. However, if you balance that with a good chunk of plant-based protein, and we can go through some examples, it's going to be able to, you have the full amino acid profile that builds complete protein from the animal side, and you also have good source of plant-based protein or provides some amino acids and also the other benefits. So there are several categories of plant-based protein I personally really enjoy. Do we have any need to define what animal proteins are, or is that pretty clear?
I think it's clear. It is for me.
So muscles from the animals or eggs or that kind of thing. Okay. So plant-based proteins, I like them from This is not a very exhaustive list, but I like them from several, three categories. So first category is nuts and seeds. And I find that, you can either get nuts or you can either get seeds. People have their different preferences, but my absolute favorite in this category is hemp seeds. I have this amazing recipe where you blend hemp seeds, olive oil, garlic, fresh lemon juice, and lots of basil and some spinach. You can blend everything together, makes a delicious pesto for dipping or pouring that over some nice quinoa pasta.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm going to give that a try.
Oh, it's
Yeah,
addictive.
it
And
sounds good.
the vibrant green is just so delicious. The second category is whole grains. And with keto diet and everything, people tend to shy away from this category because people find that okay, it's just a bunch of carbs. Yes, and I would say you're a very that's a really good point because you don't want to have a lot of empty carbs where it doesn't really contribute to any nutritional value to your diet. But what I really love are some ancient whole grains. So if you buckwheat is something I just absolutely fell in love with. You can it is kind of crunchy. You can just pop it in your mouth and eat it raw or toasted. Or you can have it just boil it, can make a nice porridge out of it, or you can just steam it, like how you would do with quinoa or other things. I just find somehow just when I eat that, it just suits me really well. But some other examples, such as quinoa, teff, millet, just experiment with your grains, okay, whole grains.
You said my
And then,
favorite grain there, which is teff. Really, really love that.
oh, okay. How do you prepare that?
I just do it like as a porridge. So, and you know, an another thing which we didn't discuss here was I find this teff really helps me with my menstrual cycle. It helps to reduce the flow. So I have that at least once a month around my
It is
cycle.
just jam-packed with protein and other nutrients as well. So it's not only just plant-based protein, but it has so many other benefits.
Yeah, I love
Okay,
that.
this it's put that in the description as well.
For real, sure.
Yeah, there's a blog post right there. And the third one is the category of legumes. Okay, we have our nuts and seeds, whole greens, and legumes. The legumes and it's like what we mentioned, lentil stew, roasted chickpeas, hummus, those kind of things. Really delicious plant-based protein. And some odd ones, so that's a bonus category. Some really odd ones would be basil seeds. Basil seeds are actually kind of related to hemp seeds. They become gelatinous when you soak them in water, and it's so delicious and fun to just eat them and chew on them, just like having bubble tea.
Is it come gelatinous like the chia and the flax seed, something
Yeah,
like that? Okay.
when you soak it, yeah. So chia seeds, although it's a seed, but that can be a special category there. And also your superfoods such as chlorella. Chlorella is higher in protein concentration than spirulina. Also very high in chlorophyll and all of those things. So yeah, that is a surprise category there.
All right. So one other thing, I think we're winding down now. I just wanted to ask you, can an injury or a trauma cause a woman, is there such a thing as going into menopause? Can an injury or trauma cause that to happen?
Oh, definitely. There's actually people who can go into a surgical or medically induced menopause if they have some kind of hysterectomy or chemotherapy, that's another type of trauma. Or for some people under the age of 40, if they started experiencing menopause, then it could be related to other inflammatory issues in the body. One of them being really, really high stress. The body kind of shuts down the rest and digest and reproduce branch in the nervous system. And it could also be due to autoimmune disease and nutritional deficiencies, more like inflammatory damage.
Wow, that's good to know. I didn't realize that. You know, I'm going to go back to this one again. What, if any, is the relationship between menopause and high blood pressure?
Ah, okay. So there is the mechanism behind it. Menopause is linked because of lack of estrogen. The body tend to... So first of all, we talked about the increase in biomarkers for heart disease.
Right.
There's a potential there. So as more and more cholesterol and the undesirable kind of cholesterol build up in the body. So what I love that you're taking the understanding of our audience to the next level. It's a really great question. So as you imagine these fat droplets kind of saturating the blood, so it's not completely accurate, but just go with it. Think about these oil droplets in the bloodstream. There is a more likelihood that these little droplets of blood can get in, can get oxidized, can get rancid and oxidized due to our own metabolic process, right? Because we breathe in oxygen all the time. We leave butter on the counter, hot summer weather, for some time it's gonna turn rancid. Right? So same thing in our body. So the more fat there is circulating the bloodstream, imagining that those fat droplets get oxidized. And there could also be what will increase that process, increase the speed of that process is metabolic conditions such as diabetes. Right? So diabetes is also another source of inflammation in a body. So that's going to rapidly turn those oil into inflammatory potentials that can damage the blood vessels. And as more damage to the blood vessel there is, more likely that there's going to be body naturally try to heal, directing more cholesterol and calcium to the wounded arteries and blood vessels, causing blockage. And as you have blockage in your circulatory system, the heart is going to work a lot harder and pump a lot harder to get that blood flow through. And it also could be due to the lack of collagen. So the weakening of blood vessel can lead to the inability or lack of the ability to regulate blood pressure because the blood vessel walls are not as supple and elastic.
Awesome. Very good information you are sharing with us.
Can I add one more thing?
Go ahead. Yeah,
actually, this is it's a parting gift considering to all the audience out there. If you want to experience this hot flashes seems to be a main concern here. There's something you can do right away. An action item for you is to try some sage tea. The sage is really important, especially if you have a lot of night sweats that's giving you problems sleeping. You can combine that with things like chamomile and alfalfa to help reduce night sweat, and some peppermint in there for some additional cooling effect. And you can also use sage topically.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, that is
it's very cooling and astringent.
All right.
Keep a little spritz of it in the fridge.
Okay. All right. So, Thalia, you've shared, as I said, some really amazing information that I know we're all going to put into use, pay attention to, whether it's going to be, you know, making sure that we exercise, walk more, get some gardening done. The housework has to be done, so we're going to turn around and do that. And you know, we're going to combat our hot flashes through some sage tea. And for the vaginal dryness, we're going to try using some calendula, St. John's wort, the vitamin E that you said. And for diet, we want to increase protein, you're saying. Is that correct? You want
That's
to do
right.
right.
In conjunction with movements that you enjoy. So actually, some people are afraid of getting too much protein, but because protein alongside with exercise actually build your muscles, where it will increase your metabolism.
Brilliant, brilliant. So we want to get some good quality proteins, make sure that it's plant-based and animal protein. And your recommendations were nuts and seeds, just seeds on a whole. Pumpkin seeds, we have sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, and nuts would be almond. Any kind of nuts is good.
Typically, any kind of nuts that's unprocessed,
Okay.
not the roasted kinds,
Right.
because that alters the property of the oils.
Yes. Okay,
And
right.
especially flax seeds there for some additional phytoestrogen properties.
We have the whole grains, such as ancient grains. Buckwheat was your favorite, teff was mine, and you know. And then we talked about legumes, as lentils, hummus, chickpeas, and the bonus was the basil seed. So, yeah,
And
and
spirulina,
spirulina is a
chlorella.
superfood. Awesome, very good. And you know, I'm just in awe. I took my notes here because definitely I have to make sure that I flip later on. And when I do experience, oops, when I do start to experience some of the perimenopausal symptoms, I know exactly what to do. I'm ahead of the game, right?
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to take it to the next level, we just simply scratch the surface of, some natural alternatives, what we can kind of implement in case these symptoms come on. We can delve deeper into the relationship of liver and good bowel movements and good detoxification, what that has to do in support of menopausal symptoms. And also the adaptogens, I think, is also very, in adrenal health, adaptogens are very, very good to consider during this time.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely have to get back on another podcast for those two topics. This has been awesome. Is there any final words or thoughts that you'd like to leave with us today before we end?
I just want to really give a shout out to all the women out there, because our body's been through a lot of changes. And, I think throughout the different stages of life, I think we come to grasp of who we are. And I think menopause is a beautiful thing that needs to be celebrated. Even that means that, our body tend not to develop that hourglass figure, but, we need to be, I think, we need to be more. It's a beautiful reminder of, not of the our age, but also it's a beautiful thing that's a reminder of all the wisdom and all the love and all the friends that we have in our lives.
We need to embrace that and look at it as a positive thing as opposed to a negative thing, which most of us look at menopause and just see dread, have dread in our hearts, and embrace it, and we can change it,
Yeah,
hopefully.
absolutely. Absolutely. It can be daunting if people start to develop really severe symptoms. So, always look for really compassionate practitioners where you are, who can listen to you, who can understand your case, your unique biochemistry, and your unique presentations, and really take that to heart and provide some personal guidance. So never be afraid to ask for help, because this is something that needs to be celebrated, and practitioners, a good practitioner would want you to to enjoy this process rather than to suffer through it.
Right, indeed, indeed. You just said a good practitioner, and I know that that's you. You're a practitioner. Do you see clients and
Thank you.
ladies for menopause? Do you have any clients that come to see you regarding their menopausal issues?
Oh yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, you can get in touch with me,
Yeah. Go right ahead.
or wherever you are. I do work with people all over the world because, now the technology is connecting us the way it never connected before. But if you look for good practitioners in your area, just definitely make sure that they can lend you a compassionate ear and really approach your case as an individual. I
So
think you deserve that.
definitely. So Thalia, suppose someone's listening today wants to get in touch with you. Can you give us your email address or what method you prefer people to connect with you?
Definitely. Actually, my practice is Talia Sage Wellness. Maybe
Sage.
it's meant to be sage,
Sage.
sage like the herb.
Yes, I get it.
If Kathleen can put my email down below,
Yeah.
reach out to me. We can start a conversation there. TaliaSageWellness@gmail.com.
Okay, awesome. So I'll definitely put that in the description of this
Or you can
podcast.
head straight to TaliaSageWellness.com, where on the top bar you can book a discovery session. Just if you feel like want to take it to the next level, discussion session is completely free, and we can have a further discussion about how I can help you.
Awesome. That is great. So yeah, again, I'll make sure I put your information in the description of this podcast so my listeners can get in touch with you and take advantage of some great information as you've provided us with today. So I just want to thank you, Thalia, for taking the time out of your day to share with us how women can help go through this process, this transition in life. At ease or learn how to manage the symptoms and make it more easy on them. So thank you.
I want to say it's an honor to be on your podcast, Kathleen, and I appreciate your passion and your leadership in helping women understand their body better and feel empowered in their own body.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Thalia. Take care. Have a good day.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoy the topic and found something that you can apply to your own life. Don't forget to share this episode with your family and friends. And remember, live well daily.